Welcome to the latest episode of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. I'm Tom, hosting today, joined as always by my esteemed colleagues, Rick, Grant, and Keith. Before we introduce our special guest this evening, I figured we'd lead right in with our usual weekly nerd roundup.
I don't know if you guys remember from our last podcast, my TV died on me, and I've been searching for new television, but my discovery of Netflix has pretty much quelled that, and I don't think I need a new TV.
Yeah!
Wait, hold on. What are you going to play this? What, you got the PS3 that you're so excited about?
I'm telling you, man, having a tablet and having Netflix? Who needs television?
What are you playing these consoles? We were so proud of you for playing console games. What are you playing these things on now?
I'm not playing them on anything. I'm surviving. I don't need my late night Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Don't need to watch the Weather Channel, Discovery Channel. It's like I'm not missing anything almost. The only thing I miss is watching DVDs.
Dude, and I'll be the first to tell you that the cable TV sucks, period. We all know that. But you do need a TV because if you're digging this stuff on your tablet, you're going to dig it quadranero, should I say, when you get your big screen.
Does this tablet have an HDMI out on it?
It actually does have an HDMI out on it, but I don't have anything to HDMI it into.
If you had a TV, you could.
That's true. It's just like, I was all into buying a new TV, and now I'm like this whole weekend, well, for reasons we won't go into, work, I did absolutely no TV shopping. I was just like, yeah, who cares? I don't need it. But, it's weird. It's. I didn't think I could. I mean, it's not like I'm addicted to TV or nothing, but it's, you know, I'm enjoying my other things that I have.
I don't know, man.
In ways that I never did before.
If the Weather Channel was seriously going to factor into one of your purchasing decisions, you might have been addicted to television. I'm just going to go ahead and say that.
I do love the Weather Channel.
So Keith, to sum up, you have discovered that you don't need a TV, only to subsequently discover that you do need a TV to take full advantage of the device that's making you realize you don't need a TV.
I guess that's the way it's working out, ain't it?
It seems to be. Wow. Anything else exciting in your life before I bounce over to the next co-host?
No, I had 4 days off. I didn't have to work on Thursday and Friday in the office. But seeing as how I'm on call 24/7, I got a call on Thursday and it ended up working all 4 days, about 12 hours a day. So my holiday weekend was just lovely.
Wonderful.
That's about it.
Wow. Well, thankfully, that holiday's over.
No.
It was a real turkey of a holiday.
Guys, I thought we had a meeting about this. Please, off of the puns. You're killing me here.
We'll carve out a few more before the night's over.
I quit.
What about you, Rick?
Well, as you guys may know, and listeners may or may not know, I am not only like your standard technical geek, but I am also a gigantic animal nerd. So I took advantage of having 4 days off, and I decided that I was going to visit the lovely, newly renamed Metro Zoo. in Miami, which is now called Zoo Miami. I haven't been there in a bunch of years because I've been spending most of my zoo time at Animal Kingdom and at Disney World. But I was pleasantly surprised. They have a bunch of new reptile houses and cool animal features and whatnot. It was a eventful and exciting trip, to say the least. And aside from that, I got down and dirty with my new Arduino Mega, working on a super secret animal project that I can't mention any further details because Billy Mays will come down on me like Thor's hammer. And I picked up a book, a little book called Racing the Beam, and it's all about the Atari computer system, Atari 2600, the ins and outs of programming and kind of just like the history of programming the system. Gets involved with some of the better known programmers, and you kind of learn the trials and tribulations they went through back in the day to produce some of the mind-boggling stuff that they were actually able to do with such crutching limitations on the system.
Have you gone through the book at all?
Yeah.
I was just curious, because I don't know. What language did they use for programming that stuff?
Assembly?
Really?
No, not Dead Star Assembly. Regular Assembly.
Oh, God.
Shameless plug.
Let me get a joke in edgewise.
So wait, was this book written by an Atari insider, or like just a biographer that came along later?
You know what? I don't even know, to be honest with you.
It's not like written by a Bushnell or anything like that, though.
No, but okay. It's kind of like the unofficial handbook for people attempting to program the Atari 2600. Even though it's not like an official guide, there's enough information in here to help you maybe get through some trouble spots and whatnot. So that was another thing I did. I broke out my old laptop and dusted off a bunch of the Atari programs that I started writing back in the day. Back in the day meaning 5 years ago.
I remember some of those. That's back when you and I used to work together, right?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. I dusted off some of that stuff and wanted to see if I could shine some new light on it based on information I'm finding out in this book. So we'll see. We may have a Nerdstravaganza Atari 2600 official game cart in the works next year sometime. That'd be kind of cool.
I think we should make that happen.
And that's about it for me.
I'd like that. I'd like that. I'd like if that Atari tape were out there.
Will it play on my Nintendo?
Grant, speaking of your Nintendo with an I, what have you been up to?
Strangely enough, I've actually been playing some Nintendo, which is probably the most memorable thing about Thanksgiving. I played a lot of the new Zelda game.
Mm.
It's surprisingly decent for a Wii game. It's no Skyrim, but it's...
But it does start with the same three letters, doesn't it?
Sure, why not? Skyward Sword, yeah, why not?
Uh-huh.
It is a Nintendo game, and I'm actually enjoying it, which is probably the first time that's happened in years.
So it's not like a kiddie game?
It is. They hold your hand up until, for the first 3 hours. It's incredibly slow. Final Fantasy games start out faster than this.
Wow.
Otherwise, it's kind of fun. I'd give it a solid B+ right now. So that's pleasing. A lot of Skyrim, just an immense amount of Skyrim also, which... Still a great game.
Wonderful.
Taught myself a new 3D modeling program. I'm just learning the basics of, actually putting 3D into Android, so... I've never much liked OpenGL. I've never liked developing OpenGL with Java, but I figure it's about time to really learn more of that.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a good time. You know what? I only own one Honeycomb device, and that's my Google TV. Which, unlike you, I've started getting into watching TV now. Turns out, I still don't like TV very much. I mostly use it to watch Netflix or, the Amazon Video On Demand. That's about it.
Overrated.
Keith, I'll program you an app in Flash, and then I'll export it out through the Android SDK. And,
Rick
know.
Said the F word.
Rick's not saying the F word. But that's
we're
another
not
show.
Another
that's
Flash.
Another show.
It's a good thing we're neutral on Flash on this show and have no opinions whatsoever.
Flash rules!
Anything else to report, Grant, before I hold forth?
You know what? Way too much, but I can feel a little bit of tension in the air right now. Like there's something really special that you want to get out there. So I'm going to bite my tongue on all this Thanksgiving goodness and let you roll on here.
Well, I will start by letting you know what I've been up to. I also bought a book, coincidentally. I guess Rick and I got the reading bug the same week. It is a book about virtual reality and artificial worlds. It is actually called Infinite Reality: Avatars, Eternal Life, New Worlds, and the Dawn of the Virtual Revolution. It is a lovely book, and I highly recommend it.
The most painful sounding title I've ever heard of for a book.
It's as fake as the content it talks about.
It sounds like a book that would be on somebody's shelf, like in a bad movie about virtual reality.
Are you done?
No, go on about the book. I want to ridicule the contents also.
I virtually had it with you.
You asked for it, Grant.
Anyway, you know, my interest sort of lies in like what current massively multiplayer games could evolve to be, and you know, a compelling, changing world, et cetera, and so forth, could really take things in exciting new directions. And this book seems to be sort of predicting those sorts of developments in the future. So I recommend that to anybody so inclined.
Now, does it go in depth about the mass transit systems of those virtual worlds?
That is the one bit that I found to be missing. I'm going to see if I can get the author to publish an addendum to the book that talks about that. Because everybody wants to go into
your transit fetish.
Correct, because I know that I'm not alone in wanting to enter a sci-fi or fantasy world and then ride a train or bus everywhere.
Only if it's hard sci-fi with a real, proper working monorail system.
Or a train pulled by griffins.
Yes.
Wouldn't they have, like, Brundle transporters by then?
Brundle fly.
I wouldn't want to become half tick, so I hope not. Anyway, aside from that, in the wake of the recent American Thanksgiving holiday that we celebrate here in the United States of America, I went with my family. My father lives near Orlando, Florida, and we went to the Universal Studios theme park as well as the Universal Studios Island of Adventure theme park. Had a lovely day on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and I proceeded to finally get to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter attraction, which is absolutely fantastic. Magical, you might say.
Is it as good as Captain EO?
What is, honestly, Keith? But they tried. They tried so hard. It was awesome. You know, it has cool rides, and I really just love the amount of detail they put into these different theme park worlds, and like, you know, kettles stirring themselves and dishes floating by the windows and stuff, and all the little alleys and things you could walk by occupied a lot of my attention. But of course, the family is just like, what are you going down there for? We got to keep moving. Got to get to the next thing. They don't really sound like that.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But, do they still have the Dr. Seuss land?
They do indeed, and I went on the Cat in the Hat ride as soon as I got there, which is my tradition.
Yeah, I like that drink.
Yeah. I have a Universal tradition.
Do you?
It's to not go there.
To go to Disney.
Yep.
Disney.
Yeah.
Well, truth be told, Epcot would have been my preference, but due to some veto on the part of my sibling, we ended up going to Universal.
I know, I was rubbing a little salt in that known wound, sorry there.
Appreciate that.
Sometimes you gotta get your coaster on, man.
Well, I won't get into that. Nobody could ride roller coasters, so I didn't even get to do that. But
that's the worst
trip.
Yeah, I so would have rather been at Epcot. But anyway, that was that. It was still cool. I still had a great time. Aside from that, I've also been playing some Skyrim. Looking forward to getting the Skyward Sword so that I can see if my Wii still works.
By the way, you have to have the Wii Motion Plus for that.
Yeah, I'll pick
it up. So you'll probably want to get the special edition that comes with the gold Wiimote.
Ooh, I think I will. Isn't the Wii Motion Plus just the PlayStation Move?
It's I think it's another set of accelerometers and a gyro or something, who knows?
It's the addition of the gyro.
Does the gyro spoil, or does it keep for a long time? I don't know if I'm going to want to eat it right away.
Tom.
I didn't get that!
Tom. Well, because it's not even pronounced gyro. It's pronounced gyro or something like that.
Sorry, Grantopolis. I didn't know you...
Because Can I get that accelerometer with some tzatziki sauce, Grant?
I hate you all so much right now.
My acceladrometus is working great in this game. Well, guys, now that we've pretty much caught up on what we've been up to for the past week, I think I want to segue to the next portion of our show. I want to introduce our special guest tonight, a classic arcade legend in the making, a talented musician, a player of poker, and a player of a little game you might have heard of called Miss Pac-Man. As well, a personal friend of mine. His name is Steve, the legend, Kwisatz.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. A part of this pun-palooza.
So Steve, tell us about yourself. Tell us about your many accomplishments.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we actually staged a live event right here in Fort Lauderdale.
Wow.
And went for the Guinness Book of World Records in Turbo Miss Pac-Man. And I currently hold the fifth highest score in the world, recognized on Twin Galaxies, at 759,390. The world record is 922,000. And a couple weeks ago, the event we did, which was a good success, actually. It was really cool. We had an arcade legend that graced us with his presence.
Who's that?
That would be one Billy Mitchell.
Now, did he bring his hair?
He brought it all. He brought the USA tie and the hairpiece.
Did he bring his hot sauce?
Yes, he did. That was awesome. He actually brought some samples and gave some out to some people. But on this day, I was actually involved in what would have been a memorable game. I was one of my best starts I've done. I was close to 400,000 points on my first man. And all of a sudden, a power surge happened.
Just the curse of Billy Mitchell.
And it was ridiculous. It was so surreal, I didn't even realize it happened at first. But I think everybody else realized it before I did. Who was watching. But, I mean, that obviously reset everything, and I had to start from scratch, and it sucked.
Now, how long had you played for before that happened?
I was about an hour and 15 minutes into that game.
Oh, jeez.
Now, Billy Mitchell being famous or infamous as the antagonist in the famous documentary film King of Kong, were shenanigans on his part suspected? Was it suspected that he somehow engineered the outing of the power in that building?
Well, it's funny. We actually did something for the internet, a little funny segment where we sort of did a little play off that where, you know, Billy was like, I categorically deny this guy's game. You know, he'd like to make you think that I pulled the plug on him, but, you know, it's not the case. And so we had a little fun with it.
That's
but,
cool.
No, it was, it wasn't just my machine. It's the whole place. So it was only for, like, you know, a split second or couple seconds, and then everything came back on, but the damage was done.
That took the wind out of your sails.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was actually my second game. My first game, I had actually eclipsed my fifth place score, and then the second game, I was, you know, halfway to the high score, or the world, number one score, and then that happened. So yeah, after that, I played a little bit, but I, you know, at that point, I'm like 3.5 hours into playing two games, so yeah, I was starting to get a little exhausted.
So, it probably goes without saying what spawned your interest in classic arcade games was playing them when they weren't classic, when they were actually contemporary.
They were fresh, yeah.
Brand new in the arcade. And I assume some, you know, thinking back to that sort of got you back in the mode, and as well as watching some documentaries got you back into the scene, so to speak.
Yeah. I'd sort of taken an absence for a while. I was just sort of, I don't know, just delved into other things and then revisited it, and definitely watching some of those films sort of sparked that competitiveness and that interest, you know, and wanting to get back into it, and, you know, being able to sort of revisit that whole, you know, part of my life when I was younger.
Cool. And anything else to add? I mean, are there any other aspects of sort of the classic arcade scene appeal to you? Do you collect games? Do you actually like opening them up and refurbing them, working on them, anything like that?
Right. Well, I recently, like, to purchase the stand-up Miss Pac-Man arcade game for the house for the purpose of record setting and just for the purpose of having it in the house is just sort of a cool thing. You know, whether there's guests over, just sort of having something like that, you know, I think it's just cool to have. But, collecting, I mean, I would like to. Obviously, it could be expensive if you're, you know, looking to collect you know, full stand-up games or what have you, but it's actually pretty cheap to just build, you know, Al, I guess, to sort of build a cabinet and just sort of go the MAME route.
Mm-hmm.
Just have, like, a bunch of games that... You would, one computer.
That wouldn't bother you from a purity standpoint? You're not running actual hardware?
No. I think it's convenient. You just have more variety to play, even if it's not going to be considered official by the standards of if you want to set a record on something. But just for the sake of just playing it whenever you can, whenever you want to, just the convenience of having that.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah,
in
sure.
Your house. It's a nice, lazy convenience.
Yeah.
Just want to not go anywhere.
Now, can I ask you a question here? How much training have you been spending actually doing the Ms. Pac-Man?
Well, I have the stand-up machine in my house. So I typically, you know, every couple days, you know, I'll try to get a game in. With the other work I do, it's starting to become in season now. So I don't have as much time. But yeah, I, obviously prior to this event, I practiced one up in volume a little bit.
So do you have any tips to any aspiring, like, high score achieving video gamers out there? Any words of wisdom?
Never surrender. That's stolen from Billy. But...
I'm going to ask a question that probably gets asked of all championship longtime video gamers. If you had to figure how much money you would have spent playing all these video games in quarters, how much would it be?
Not too much, because I can go pretty far in a quarter.
Damn!
Listen to that modesty shine through. That's impressive. Now,
the game itself, okay, so
being good at especially classic arcade games is very economical.
Indeed.
It's sort of like an extra motivation to be good. It's like, wow, I can't afford not to be.
I'm not good. I'm trying to save a buck here.
Some games have patterns and things like that. Is that the way it is with Ms. Pac-Man, or is it more of, you know, just longevity, staying alive, avoiding things? I mean, this... The game's kind is. I can't remember Ms. Pac-Man if it gets harder as it, you go further along or not. Just kind of curious as you know how you're able to maintain and get such high scores.
Well, you're right. It's all those factors. Yes, it does get extremely difficult as you go along because the ghosts wind up becoming the same speed as you.
Okay.
The difference between Ms. Pac-Man and Pac-Man. Pac-Man, everything like fruit doesn't move or they there's objects in the middle that are worth points that sort of stay there.
Right.
And it's a lot more calculated. Ms. Pac-Man, there's definitely more of an element of randomness as you go along. There comes a point, obviously, where the ghosts don't change anymore from the big power pellet. And then also the fruit is randomized, so you, after a while you don't really know what's going to come out. And there's a certain amount of time to make sure you have two fruits that come out on each board after a while that you sort of have to time it right. So, and then there is an element of luck as far as even getting the high score. You sort of have to be lucky because there's no known way, although there have been theories, of being able to dictate what fruit comes out. I mean, it's all random.
Cool.
So, but what about ghost patterns? Is that similar to Pac-Man where it's got its standard sets of patterns or no?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely patterns that you can do that will steer the ghost. Almost like a seduction.
Right.
Steer the ghosts to go where you want them to go or where you want them to be. Especially when you're in the first 15 to 20 boards where you can actually eat them or, you know, after gaining the power pellet. Then after a while, it's you know, obviously it's just avoiding them.
Would you say that that makes you something of a ghost charmer?
A ghost face killer.
Oh my goodness.
So what are the difference? What's the difference between a regular Ms. Pac-Man and a Turbo Ms. Pac-Man? For those who don't know,
just the speed. There's a chip. It's called a 6F chip in the board, and that chip is what makes the game faster. Regular Ms. Pac-Man is considered there's Turbo Ms. Pac-Man, which is called Turbo Speed, and then Standard Ms. Pac-Man is considered as Factory Speed, and just considerably slower. And it's harder. The original Ms. Pac-Man is actually harder.
Mm.
You really have to know your patterns. Whereas in Turbo Ms. Pac-Man, you can make up for some speed-wise.
I see.
You can make up for certain situations by being a, you know.
Little trivia. Do you know what 6F stands for?
I did, actually.
I know what it is. Six-Face Killer.
Oh, Six-Face Killer.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that nickname.
I don't think that's true, actually.
Well, it's totally true, because there's not six ghosts, so it makes complete sense.
Yeah, prove it's not.
You know what, I can't. So,
now,
is there actually a kill screen in Ms. Pac-Man? Because there is, like, considered a perfect game to the original Pac-Man, right?
Right.
Now, there's no, with the randomness of the fruit scores, and I'm guessing no kill screen on Ms. Pac-Man, there's no such thing?
No, there is a kill screen.
Oh, there is.
Ms. Pac-Man is 100 between, depending on if it's the reunion game or the original board, it's between 134 and 141 boards in Ms. Pac-Man. Once you get to that, then a kill screen does kick in. Now, what's interesting about the Ms. Pac-Man kill screen is that's random as well. There's as much as 8 kill screens. You can actually beat the kill screen in Ms. Pac-Man up to 8 of them. But sometimes you get to the end of the game and the machine just resets to the beginning and you see no kill screens. And sometimes you'll actually get a kill screen and, you know, it's... I haven't figured all of them out, kill screens, yet, but...
There's a way... Have you actually seen a kill screen?
Yeah, I've achieved kill screen numerous times, and recently on the machine here at the house I did, and it was interesting. It was just a very weird... Once the last board was basically, like, you see the ghost, but you don't see the outline of the maze. It's just sort of all... Wow. And you see the ghost, and it's all... It looks very, like... awkward and just, like, dysfunctional or what have you. Like, you know, it's being used for the memory you see on the screen.
That's right.
But Pac-Man, yes, you can get it. But regarding the question of perfect game, Pac-Man, it is possible. Miss Pac-Man, it's not possible.
Okay.
But so, there is a kill screen. In most a lot of classic arcade games, there's kill screens. But, like, for instance, the Donkey Kong kill screen lets you play the board, and then you just up and die after like 5 to 10 seconds. Ms. Pac-Man's kill screen, you could actually beat the kill screen, and then the game would be over. But.
So is your score up until that point largely predicated by the random drops of the fruit, or how much does the way you played up until that kill screen influence your score?
Well, there's a certain amount you can get by getting all the ghosts early on in the game before they don't see it. And then after that, it really is up to... Well, the main thing is you have to make sure you get the fruits that come out, regardless of what they are. You know, within the course of finishing the maze, as far as getting all the pellets and avoiding the ghost, also getting the fruits each board. Mm. Some people just try to get through the game, and they don't go for the fruits, and they actually use the fruit to, you know, to sort of help them get through the maze so the ghosts aren't completely focused on you. But to get all the fruits, get all the ghosts that are pertinent earlier in the game. After that, it's just, there's no telling what your final score will be. It's just, it's always 141 screens, though. Once you get to the 141st screen, you know your game's going to be over, regardless of what the score is.
So would you agree that Ms. Pac-Man is like poker, and is also like the music industry, in that there is a degree of skill and luck involved?
Just say yes.
I'll go with
I'm going to say no.
Those are great analogies.
That's a triple analogy. That's called
a trifecta.
It is. That's called tying it all together.
Let me ask you this. When did you get started playing it? I mean, I would imagine when you were a kid in the 80s, eh?
Yeah. I just, you know, discovered arcades and was infatuated by Ms. Pac-Man. I don't know. It was just OCD about the game. I just started playing it.
The other games didn't appeal to you, or
no? There's a lot of other ones I like. I just happen to be naturally good at Ms. Pac-Man off the bat. Like, I just knew. Whereas other games I thoroughly enjoy, but I don't go as far in.
Would you say you had a particular memory of Ms. Pac-Man that you were playing it? You had an experience where you're like, yes, this is my game.
Yeah, you sort of had that feeling that I think if I really tried, I can go far in this game. Whereas other games I may have enjoyed, but you know, for some reason, it didn't attach to me as much.
So, I mean, we're what, three or more decades since sort of arcade, classic, original.
30 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
Would you say you mentioned sort of a revitalization being driven by a lot of documentaries and sort of popular interest? Would you say that this resurgence is going to last, or do you think this arcades, at least in the classic form, are here to stay for a while, or is this going to be a passing fad in your mind?
I think to a certain degree they'll be around, because I think there's enough enthusiasts that are in my age range at this point. It is sort of the age range for the retro games. To where, like, I just got back from Brooklyn and went to a place called Barcade as an example. It was amazing. You know, obviously a bar, and then they had classic arcade games that were all coin-operated. And that was thriving. So I guess it depends on the area, really. If you're in bigger cities or if you're in places where there's just more people and more culture, especially, you know, areas where, you know, as things come back that were fashionable or that were trendy, you know, there'll always be that aspect. But, you know, I think it just maybe depend on the area that you're in. Like, for instance, down here in South Florida, where obviously there's a place called Arcade Game Sales on North Federal Highway. And it's basically a shop to where the guy who runs it repairs games, and he leases them and sells them. But we're trying to sort of transform it once a week into an arcade. So that would be a good question for future reference to see how it does. See if it, which I hope it does well, because I think it's an awesome outlet to have. You know, especially the location of it, and, you know, something to do, you know, on your way to doing something else, perhaps, you know, on a Friday night. So
yeah. If these classic arcades did well enough for long enough, do you think companies would actually be drawn in to develop updated versions of older games or even newer games? Could you see getting back to a point where arcade game manufacturers would start making new content for arcades?
Well, it's already happening a little bit. I know the creator of Pac-Man, there was recently a convention in Orlando. There's Robert, who runs that place I was just talking about, and he partners with Billy Mitchell for an arcade at Orlando International Airport, ironically called King of Kong Arcade.
Oh,
I've been there.
Oh, whoa, cool.
It's
funny how there's all the wallpapers of Donkey Kong, yet there's no Donkey Kong machine in it.
Yeah, no way, really?
Yeah, that was...
All like newer games. But they had a convention, and I guess the creator of Pac-Man was there. Didn't know Billy was going to be there, and I guess they were in the works of making sort of a new Pac-Man style game. So yeah, I get that's definitely a possibility.
Cool.
I mean, they've been redoing the Pac-Man name for the past few years with their Championship series and Championship DX. Like, they every once in a while they will come along and reinvent some of these, you know, some of these older games in a newer format. I think the really interesting thing would be, are they going to reinvent these for an arcade setting?
Right, as opposed to home systems.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, Mario is the best example. I mean, Mario has been reinvented in all kinds of different games. You know, dating back from Donkey Kong, Mario Kart, and obviously Super Mario back in the day, and
almost exclusively on home consoles, though. I don't think I've seen a new Mario game in an arcade.
Right. Well, that's what I was steering more toward the home systems
but,
on that.
But it just, I did. Speaking of sort of more modern arcades, I was at the Ground Control arcade out in Portland, Oregon.
I'd like to go there.
You should.
It's
should.
Wonderful, a magical place.
Yeah, we vouch for it 100%. But they actually had the new Pac-Man versus machine, which I think is from last year, was, you know, from 2010. So that's an example of sort of Namco, the original maker, I guess. You know, Namco, building on that classic concept with a new product.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, the whole being able to play with other people, you know, anytime across the world. I mean, it's hard
too convenient.
Yeah.
That's a topic we've discussed at length among ourselves. You know, within the context of this show, there's a definite appeal to being able to play with everyone in the comfort of your living room. But I think the social aspect of the place to go is lost. You don't have an arcade to go to and hang out with your friends and maybe have a drink. I like that element of it. What do you guys
think? I love it. I mean, I had computers, and every time I had a roll of quarters, it was like, let's go to the arcade. I loved going to them in the mall. I liked playing video games in, you know, anywhere other than home. You know, it's just getting out.
Here. I love the ambiance.
Yeah.
You know, just going somewhere and, you know,
now, have you mentioned, I mean, we're here in South Florida, obviously. Have you lived down here long? Are you from here?
Yeah, I've lived here periodic. I'm not originally from here, but I've been back here for about 7-8 years now, and originally moved here in 95, so I've been here enough.
So you're familiar with Grand Prix Race-O-Rama?
Yes, definitely.
We talk about that place a lot, man. That was one of the... I would have a quarter in my pocket, and I'd call my buddies, and it's time to go to Grand Prix.
Those were the days. Those were the days indeed. I don't know if we'll ever see a return to those, but it sure would be nice if we returned to something like that.
Well, you got boomers.
Settle down.
we don't speak of that place around here.
Really? It's taboo.
It's
blasphemy.
We're not a fan.
It's taboomers.
Yeah. Boomers used to be okay.
Well, one of the... I don't even know if I want to get into it enough to let people know what it is.
Well, my hope is with what we're trying to do with the place on North Federal, the plaza that it's in is a pretty happening plaza. Radioactive Records just moved into it. There's Babylon Tattoo. There's art galleries. So all these different businesses are sort of in conjunction with each other in this plaza. And I think one hand can wash the other, so to speak. And hopefully that other stuff around it, that'll help it enough to where maybe we can get enough people there to keep it continuous. But, time will tell. But, I mean, it really had legs. I mean, just the event that we did got some good press and, was able to be on a radio show, a talk radio show here in South Florida that's pretty recognized a couple weeks back. So, there's some kind of interest. So, but let's see if it carries on to any longevity or not.
It was a good time. I know Tom and I were there.
Yeah.
Very enjoyable time.
Try it. Yep.
It's magical. If in fact it is going to open up on a weekly basis, I will be an avid sponsor of that enterprise.
I will too.
And we call on our vast audience to follow suit. So the guy's not going to be able to keep people out.
So the fact when you had your contest or your attempt at the record, the power went out. So you said that you had originally beat your personal high score. Is that what got you to number 5, or are you ranked higher than 5 now?
No, actually, I recorded in this house, I recorded a game on a flip, in essence, on a tripod. And that, I wound up making a DVD and sending to Twin Galaxies to a referee, and he viewed the game and accepted it, and that got me 5th place. But then at the event the other week, the first game I played, I broke my own 5th place score that was already recorded. I broke
so
it.
You're even 5th-er now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't spot to 4th.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Did you break... So you're still at 5th, but with a higher score. You didn't make enough to break 4.
Exactly, right. I mean, I have unofficially, but not in an official setting yet as far as recording myself or having a referee watching me. I mean, I have gotten as much as 834,000, which would have made me 3rd place in the world. If I was part of that game. So, I mean,
has Billy Mitchell sent his goons out to your house to dissect your Ms. Pac-Man machine yet?
Not yet. Okay. I think I have to get in first place for him to embark on that.
Does Billy Mitchell, in fact, have goons? Is he the person he's portrayed to be in that film?
No, Billy's a good guy, and I think they really built up the sort of villainous aspect of him to make the movie more entertaining, from what I was told, even. By him and people that know him really well, so
he has no.
And, I mean, I'm starting to know him well. I mean, we talk and cool, you know, but because Robert, the guy who runs Paid Game Sales, is a partner with him. So
I see.
It's sort of the track to Billy.
So but, no goons.
He's not that. I mean, he's definitely portrayed as much more of a an asshole than than he really is. When I was in New York the other week, I was in sort of a 2-prong. I went up there to play a show musically, and then the next day I visited this place called Barcade and met Hank Chien, who is the current world champion in Donkey Kong.
So
and there's actually a short film made about him called Dr. Kong, which you can order and watch.
So he's defeated both.
His Billy score currently is higher. He's number 1, Steve Wiebe is 2, and Billy is 3.
And to your knowledge, Billy Mitchell does not currently have a squad of goons in his employ.
No, I think that's getting old.
Because I'm sensing an opportunity. We could be hired on as goons, and we could go take care of this guy.
I would love to be in his employ if he's looking for goons.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be a goon, and we could take this guy
professional
out.
Professional goon.
We go to New York, we go to Barcade. It would be great.
So are there any plans for another attempt at I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the arcade spot where you guys actually had the event.
It's called Arcade Game Sales.
So are you guys planning another event to attack this record?
Not yet, but we're just trying to establish it as a possible spot to hold it as an arcade once a week on our Friday nights. So that's the next thing, which will be Friday, December 9th, will be the inaugural sort of opening of it, you know, opening it up as an arcade, and then sort of going to see how it goes, and then if it goes well, we'll continue on and probably eventually have another event. I know Billy had loosely talked about something like 4 months from now, maybe setting up something and, you know, trying to get Hank to come down, maybe have a little competition type thing, but we'll see what happens.
So, have you gotten into any current gaming? Do you play any games that are out there? Any of the boxes, Xbox, PlayStation, computer, otherwise?
On occasion, I have my housemate, actually, he goes to a friend's house in Deerfield, and they sort of, they have the home systems and, you know, a bunch of, like, demos. We'll do a lot of, like, demo mode games, just try some different stuff out. But, you know, occasional, not continuous.
It does.
But at least I'm somewhat aware.
You and Rick have something else in common there. He's a big-time demo player.
Okay.
I am, dude. I am, like, the demo king.
That's only because you're cheap.
Yeah, that's true.
You should get into classic arcade gaming. Apparently you can save a lot of money if you're good.
I have a few. I have a Space Duel that's pretty much probably like C8, C9 condition. The thing's nearly immaculate. And then I have a Pac-Man that I've been restoring off and on over the past, I don't know, God knows how many years. In the past, I've had Super Zaxxon.
Oh, awesome. I love Zaxxon.
I had a Time Pilot for a while.
Oh, it's great, too.
Couple different games here and there.
Very cool. Exebius is another one I liked. As far as older stuff.
Yeah.
So Modern Warfare, guys, what do you think?
Battlefield.
Team Fortress 2.
We're a Battlefield family here, Steve. That's
no, we're Warcraft. Not. No, we're not.
So Modern Warfare is like the UFC. You guys are mixed martial arts. You're not really.
Yeah, you got it.
It's the other league.
We're pride fighting out of Japan.
Nice.
I think it's interesting. Yeah, here we got a guy who is a master at video games, but he's not. I mean, you don't spend all your time playing video games.
No, yeah, I got a lot of stuff going on. I help run a limousine company, and then, of course, the music stuff with Further Seems Forever and some of the other music projects sort of keep me busy. So, but what's good about all this stuff is I can be flexible, too, to a point, to schedule to do stuff here and there to sort of break it up or change the pace, change the scenery. But yeah, so, I mean, games are awesome. I wish I had more time I could dedicate to them, but...
All right, I'm sure the question on everybody's mind at this point is...
Yes, my pants are on.
I'm
well,
sure the second
court order.
Question
I think we
on
all
everybody's
knew that.
Mind is, what do you put in when you win? When you get the high score? What's your code?
Isn't all right, that brings me to a roundtable question. Everybody go around the room. Tom, you can point the finger at who goes next, but we'll start with you. What was the first game that you remember? Doesn't have to actually be officially the first game, but what is the first game you remember getting the high score on and being able to put your name in?
Boy.
Your first high score proud moment. What game was it and what'd you put in?
I'll never forget this, actually, now that you mention it. It was Crystal Castles.
I knew it!
I think because the arcade had been reset recently. I don't know, but I know I did it and I freaked out.
They just turned the machine on?
Probably.
I gotta say, for me, it would probably be Yayar Kung Fu, or however you pronounce it. And I put in KRA.
Nice. Nice.
What's is that your name? I guess that's your name. I never thought of your initials. I'm Centipede, personally. That was my first one. So only Centipede and Galaga are the only two classic arcade games I'll really get high scores on. And I don't believe Galaga actually lets you put in your initials either. Although I may be mistaken about that. Centipede, though, and I'm normally... Back then, it would have been G-A-C? No, G-A-B. I use G-A-B for my initials for some reason. Now, I just type in ass, though.
As you should. Rick, before I toss over to you, I forgot to mention the initials I would put in would be T-O-M.
Those aren't initials. That's just your name.
It's very creative.
Thank you. I like to live out on the creative edge, away from everyone else. Rick, what about you, man?
Mine was Kangaroo by Atari. That's the first one that I can remember being really super badass at, and I would continually get, like, all the scores on that game. I ruled it. It was at a local Winn-Dixie, and I was king. And I would put in R.I.K., of course. And the second game would be my beloved Space Duel. What about Steve?
Yeah, my code is always SLK, which are my initials. And home system-wise, I used to enjoy the poor man's Donkey Kong by the name of Congo Bongo.
Ooh, nice!
That is its own unique and wonderful game.
On ColecoVision?
ColecoVision, exactly.
Yep, I knew it.
Wow.
I always call it the poor man's Donkey Kong.
I believe that's what that translates into.
Which, that's surprising, because ColecoVision, bar none, had the absolute best port of Donkey Kong that there ever was.
Yes, it did.
Still is.
It was very
good. The Atari Donkey Kong sucked.
Yeah.
The old Atari 2600 one.
Yeah. We don't make fun of Flash, Disney World, or Atari 2600 in my presence. just putting it out there.
Okay, well, how about this? The Atari 2600 port of Pac-Man. Find anything good to say about that?
What about, does anybody remember the Atari 5200?
Completely.
Absolutely.
It was that system that wasn't the NES, right?
I remember
the 7800.
That was the 78.
I remember how shocked I was when I discovered there was, in fact, a system between the 2600 and the 7800.
Called the 5200.
Yeah.
And it was called the 5200 because it weighed 5,200 pounds.
I always have much love for the Atari 2600 just for Pitfall.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It was a nice time.
Now, did you ever venture into Intellivision?
Yes, absolutely. Not back in the day. I have an extremely impressive console collection, including my original Atari 2600 that I got in 1977, which was a first-year model given to me a year later by my uncle, because he didn't like it anymore. But I still have it, and I still play it.
It's even got the Scooby-Doo stickers still on it.
No stickers, that thing is... And a collection of over 400 unique games.
Cartridges?
Cartridges, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And, you know, that goes along with a 5200 with almost a full set of games for that. A 7800, a ColecoVision, Intellivision 1, Intellivision 2.
Brag.
All the ports that plug into them, the voice chips, the whole thing. I got a sweet-ass collection.
Do you have the ColecoVision computer?
Yep.
It prints homework neatly on paper.
Wow. His name is Adam.
As opposed to printing it non-neatly on paper.
I never quite got that.
Well, it's because, you know, it's that channel feed at, you know, dot matrix printers. They, with the channel feed and the perforated sides, could only print straight.
Wow.
Now, I have a question. I asked Robert this the other day at the arcade game sales place. Was the legendary game Track and Field ever on a home system?
Oh, it was definitely on NES.
It's on the NES. You can use a pressure pad on it. Wow, man. So I got to say, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. I think everybody concurs. Do you guys not concur with that?
Absolutely.
It's been fabulous.
I disagree.
It's nice having a pro around.
Oh. Nice having a pro around. What are you trying to say? We're hacks?
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Cool. Any final parting words for Steve, guys?
We will see you on the 9th, sir, at
829 North Federal Highway, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, arcade game sales.
Can I do my bit of housekeeping here?
You sure can.
Which is going to be to tell all of our loyal and just simply wonderful listeners to make sure to follow us on iTunes to add us, and also to rate us. Write some comments on there. The more people that, you know, obviously listen to us on iTunes, the more people that rate us positively, the more exposure we'll be getting, and the more people can listen to us in the future. So I just want to say thank you for listening, and if you could, please do that.
Yeah, that goes deadly for our guests who might want some added exposure. Just going to put that out there. Steve. Well, guys, we'll be seeing Steve on the 9th. We won't miss it. It'll be
packed. I'll be making an appearance. It could be a Billy Mitchell sighting.
You interrupted my pun. Not cool.
No, please keep going then.
Well, this has been the latest episode of the Punpalooza. We're renaming it to the Punpalooza.
Completely.
I'm renaming it to I'm not on this show anymore.
Punpalooza Sans Grant cast.
Thanks.
All right, guys. It's been a pleasure. I think it's time we signed off. Peace!
Hasta la vista.
The mind bender of the day. I don't know if it was recorded earlier. But for the millions of people listening to this, hopefully listening to this podcast around the world, here's what you do today. Immediately. You take whatever year you were born, the last two numbers, not the 19 part, and you add that with your current age, and it will always come out to 111.
My mind is still blown by that.